You're listening to Feminist Killjoys, PhD, an hour of feminism, pop culture, and politics as discussed by two professional killjoys.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Melody.
And today we'll be talking with Casey Waite, a genderqueer witch and intuitive, about ancestry and lineage and the importance of those things as practicing witches, the importance of decolonizing magic, and so much more. But first, Melody, before we get to the awesome interview that we did with Casey, how are you doing? What's up?
I'm doing okay. I'm simultaneously recording this on Instagram Live, so I'm distracted a little bit, but I'm trying not to look at the phone.
Okay.
Also, I realized the last episode we did, I think it was with Dr. Z. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that I introed us as just Feminist Killjoys?
I totally did notice that.
Me?
Are you trying to minimize our
no,
hard work as women?
It's like, maybe it's a little bit much that there's two women, femme people doing a podcast, so I'll just like take the PhD out. No, I don't know.
We don't want to scare men away, Melody.
I'm trying. You're right.
Anyway,
you know what else I want to say?
Tell me.
Do you know what my other check-in is? Is this really funny moment when I, about the recent, this is my check-in, the recent climate change situation. Well, the, you know, they're saying like once again that the world's going to end, as we all know. And they said, the best thing you can do is like, basically make individual lifestyle changes, like don't eat meat and don't drive a car and all these things that I preach. And then there was Adam responded with like, yeah, except that 71% of all pollution is related to consumerism and capitalism and giant corporations. Mm-hmm. And then I said to Rachel, I'm CNN and you're Adam.
It's true. It was a good meme.
And it really is true.
Yeah. I mean, both.
Both
you agree with both. Both and.
I do.
Here we are. Theme of the month. Cool. And you're telling me this from Milwaukee.
Yeah. I'm in my dad's studio. I'm showing Instagram Live and you'll be able to watch it later. But I'm in his psychedelic music studio. So there's lots of neon and black lights going on.
Fabulous. Here. Fabulous. Is it snowing there? You know it's snowing here, like, a lot.
No.
Yeah. It's snowing. Like, some places in Minnesota got 4 inches accumulated. It's been snowing for hours.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to stop like in an hour.
How many inches of snow do we have?
It's not really sticking, but all the trees are covered. So I'd say, I mean, maybe there's like an inch of accumulation.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and but it's going to be like 60 degrees later this week, so.
Yeah, I saw that.
Minnesota.
Cool. Well, yep. I'm so glad that climate change isn't real.
Right?
I have no evidence for that, anecdotally or scientifically, so. Cool. Okay,
cool.
Yeah, so I'm in Milwaukee. I'm going to drive back into some snow, but I'm having a good time doing the rounds, seeing my friends. I've seen three amazing pets.
Wonderful.
Yeah, my brother got a new dog. My friend Matt, hi Matt, got a new dog. And then my mom, I went to see my mom, and her cat Milo is just like my Daniel, and so we had a good time.
It's an orange cat?
Mm-hmm. Orange and white, and just like Daniel, very cuddly and playful, and yeah.
Yeah, orange and white cats are pretty great.
Thanks for feeding my got those while you were
Yeah, gone. That was fun. It was fun to hang out with them.
So that's my check-in. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I had a little bit of an up-and-down week, kind of as usual. It's been a little up-and-down, but I've been mostly good, but the big terrible thing that happened was that my car didn't start the morning. Saturday morning, I was going to teach an early yoga class and car just didn't start. So then I thankfully have a partner who has a car. So I was able to take his, but I was panicking because I just bought this new to me used car and also just got my first full paycheck after working at a place for multiple months. And it was not as high as I was hoping it would be because I still never had been really told how much I was going to be making. So anyway, I was panicking about money. Turns out, thank you to my friends Angela and Gabe, Gabe is a very, just like a classic butch who knows how to work with cars and build things. And thankfully he came over and basically figured out that it was a battery issue. The battery cost like $130, which is not great, but it could have been way worse. And then he just installed it for me. So thank goodness for...
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just like, it's
You're
nice.
Very lucky.
I'm very lucky. And it's like, I grew up with tons of people who knew how to do car stuff, mostly men, but some women too. And so it was always like, you just ask your friend, your neighbor to like do it. And I haven't had that for basically my entire adult life. So it's fun to have to have Gabe back in my, to have a Gabe in my life again. So that was good. So it could have been worse. Other check-ins, let's see. In a few days, on Thursday, I'm flying to Vegas to see friend of the show, Dr. Mish Samdars, get married by Dracula in Dracula's tomb in Vegas. So
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, Dracula is certified to marry people in Vegas. So they're going to marry John and Mish.
Aww.
Congrats to the happy couple. So I'm super excited to go to Vegas and see that fun expression of their love. And so I'm excited about that. And that's my check-in for today.
Very cool.
Yeah. But I'm also excited to be back to Witch Month, even though I'm really glad we got the chance to do that bonus episode with Z, because she's so great and it was such a good episode. But now we're back to Witch Month, back to witchy goodness with Casey Waite, a genderqueer, witch intuitive, tarot reader, artist, maker, writer, lover of history, proud socialist flower person living in occupied Abenaki Pocumtic territory, also known as South Vermont. We're so excited to have another wonderful interview. Melody, would you take us there?
Casey, thank you for joining us on Feminist Killjoys PhD. The first question we have for you is, can you describe your style of witchcraft and the kind of witchcraft that you do?
Sure. So I am of European heritage. I'm mostly English on my dad's side, and I think kind of like a mix of German and English and French and Irish on my mom's. And so my form of witchcraft is really kind of rooted in that ancestral lineage. I practice kind of like pagan Wheel of the Year stuff. So like I, you know, do personal rituals on Samhain or Halloween and the solstices, the equinoxes, all of that. And that's something that I've kind of more recently incorporated into my life. I've been interested in it for a while, but it wasn't until this year that I really committed to observing those days. And on those days, it kind of depends like what my energy level is, but usually I have a little altar in my home and I dress my altar with different stones and drawings and incense and photographs and stuff that are more specific to each day, whether it's like a, you know, Samhain would be like an ancestor sort of worship holiday. So I'll focus on my ancestors, and then, you know, something like Beltane in the spring is about fertility and life and new beginnings. So I'll put like fresh flowers and things like that. And occasionally I'll have friends come and celebrate with me if they want to. But it's a pretty solitary practice for me on like the spiritual side. And then kind of going more into the work that I do that is kind of within the witchcraft realm. I'm a tarot reader, and that's kind of primarily what I offer to people right now is tarot services. And for me, that's something that I've been doing for, I guess, like 5 years now, reading tarot. And I use the Rider-Waite-Coleman deck primarily, but I have a bunch of other great decks that I use. And that is like a tool that I use to kind of help people connect to their intuition and their higher self. And then also because so much of my practice is also political and kind of like trying to focus not just on the individual but on like collective liberation, I always kind of weave that in to my readings with my clients as well. And that can look lots of different ways. But yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. It's very much like, you know, yeah, ancestor focused. And I'm also queer, and that is something that I weave into my magic a lot, breaking down gender binaries. And that's something that I bring into my tarot practice a lot, also trying to really break down gender and hierarchy and all those things that are kind of built into the tarot as we know it, but really don't need to be.
Yeah, amazing. That was a great long, like, lots of lots of cool things that you're engaging with. And I really appreciate that. I mean, it's just such sort of a simple way to be more ethical about sort of not engaging in cultural appropriation as a witch,
right,
by looking to
Absolutely.
Your ancestral roots. So
right.
That's super awesome. I have kind of like two, I kind of would love to get like a sense of timeline in terms of when you sort of started getting into this stuff, or if it's been part of your life forever. So I'm just sort of interested in that. And since
Totally.
since you mentioned like politics sort of informing this, like, when were you politicized, what was the timeline of that, and how if you could just also sort of expand on your sort of political journey and I guess, awakening, if we could call it that, or yeah. Politicization, I guess.
Sure, absolutely. And they happened, like, really concurrently. So I grew up evangelical Christian, actually, and that was a really big part of my life, really up until high school. Both of my parents came from pretty conservative Christian families, and they were less conservative. Like, I actually grew up, like, in the Chicago area, and I'm so grateful for that, because I was exposed to all sorts of things that my parents weren't, and kind of had, like, a little bit of a leg up in terms of, like, I don't know, realizing that there is world beyond that Christian bubble. But it still really, like, kind of brainwashed me in a little bit. Like, I was really afraid of the occult. I, like, you know, didn't want to really explore witchcraft. I thought witchcraft was kind of, like, evil. I remember reading, like, a Christian girl magazine that, like, had a whole article about Wicca and how Wicca was totally evil. And so that's sort of what I grew up with. But at the same time, I was deeply spiritual and kind of, like, in more of, like, a mystical way. Like, I've had really intense experiences with, you know, spirit, which I would have called God when I was younger, but really just this, like, mystical Holy Spirit kind of energy of the universe, whatever, since I was little. And I always knew that the, like, Christian kind of framework felt really oppressive, even though I believed it. I always felt, like, kind of claustrophobic within it. And so by the time I was in high school, I was really questioning a lot. And especially when I was, like, realizing I was queer and also just exposed to kind of more progressive politics, I was really, really critical of things I was seeing in Christianity and the intense bigotry within evangelical Christianity in particular. So by the time I was in high school, I, like, wasn't really identifying as Christian anymore, but was still, you know, deeply spiritual and was kind of seeking a place to put that spirituality or, like, a framework for it. And I did the, like, typical white girl thing where I was like, maybe I'm Buddhist, or, you know, maybe I, like, want to explore, like, Sufism and all these other traditions that had nothing to do with my lineage, but felt like maybe they had less baggage for me. But ultimately, I didn't feel like that was the right thing, because it felt like I was just, like, you know, trying to cherry pick spirituality. And around the same time that I became, so when I went to college is when I kind of became politicized and was also introduced to witchcraft and sort of paganism. And it was really, like, through the same people. Like, there's definitely, like, through line, there's a lot of, like, witchy people who are also, you know, anarchists, and a lot of anarchists who are witchy people. And that was kind of where I landed somehow. When I came to college, I discovered a woman named Dori Midnight, who is an incredible healer. She's a community healer and identifies as a witch. And she does a lot of work with queer people and trans people in particular. And I found her through a zine that a friend gave me. And she just happened to have moved to Western Mass, which was close to where I was going to college. And I sent her an email and asked if I could meet her, basically, and just, like, have tea. And she became sort of, like, the model for, like, how I wanted to be in the world. That, you know, she had this really, really deeply rooted spirituality that was based on her ancestry, which was really inspiring to be like, oh yeah, like, European people do have culture, and, like, it goes back really far, and it can be hard to find, but it's there, and it's really worth, you know, exploring that. And then also, you know, everything she did was political too, that they were totally linked. And I also kind of got into, like, Starhawk and the Reclaiming Collective, and they, you know, were definitely, like, a little second wave feminist-y, like, a little bit woo in a way that made me uncomfortable. I like, have never been super comfortable with, like, goddess worship. I think because I'm non-binary, it just never really jived with me in a way I really wanted it to. I wanted to be, like, really down with the goddess, but it just felt, like, forced for me. But what I was really inspired by with the Reclaiming Collective and Starhawk was, again, their emphasis on social justice and really emphasizing the fact that, like, you know, if we're all connected, then, like, we have to fight for everybody. Yeah. I feel like I just rambled a little bit, but
No, that was great. And I also really love Dory Midnight.
Cool. Yeah, and I actually work for her now, which is like a dream come true.
Oh,
I'm
rad.
Her assistant.
That's amazing. That's super cool. Cool. So first I just want to say that I just like a lot of what you said really resonated with me in terms of like, so I didn't grow up evangelical, but I definitely went through like a pretty intense Christian phase and always felt sort of pulled to spirituality. But then I found activism basically and was like, oh, this is my new spirituality. I don't need any spirituality. Everything that I need is like on the earth right now. Like that's all we need to care about. But then when I was like feeling kind of empty, I was like, oh, I'm still like a person who is like a seeker. And I totally turned to Buddhism. I did the same thing. I was like laughing when you were like the white girl thing. And like, I actually think like, I personally think like it's fine to be inspired by a philosophy basically. And to take things that, because Buddhism is just such an incredibly rich tradition that I personally think like it's okay that people can be like inspired from that. But I similarly was like, I'm not going to fucking call myself a Buddhist. So like, you know, like that's, I'm just not going to do that. And no shade, I suppose, to, we could get into a big discussion about, you know, if that's okay for anybody. Who's white. But the point is that ultimately I was like, holy shit, like being a witch it's everything I've been looking for. And and I get to do it from this ancestral tradition. And I think that that's, you know, that's just super powerful to not feel icky about something that you're practicing, that you're trying to get, you know, sort of like fulfillment from. And also seeing it as part of something bigger and more collective, et cetera, everything that you described.
So as a non-witch, I have some noob questions, if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely.
So while you were talking, I noticed, well, now this is the third person that I've heard that people have had some kind of Christian background and they've turned to witchcraft. And so I'm just curious if you've noticed a pattern when you get to know other witches, if there is kind of a similar history to turning from one religion to witchcraft. And then also I was curious, like, what does it take to identify as a witch? Like, so I know what it takes to identify as a feminist, but what do you do? What do you have to, I don't know, like, what does it take to identify as a witch?
Yeah. So to answer your first question, I feel like in my experience, yes. Like, I think that a lot of people follow a similar path to what Rachel was explaining, like that seeking. And whether it's people who have grown up in a tradition like Christianity, or who have like kind of always been agnostic but have wanted some sort of like framework, I think a lot of people come to witchcraft with that kind of like hunger for community and something to sort of ground your spirituality in. That's something that I was really searching for. And I think a lot of the people like that I've spoken to who identify as witches, it's also like a deep longing for something that was lost. Like, I think that for me, I knew that like I always felt like there was something going on in my ancestry that I like deeply wanted to know about. I've always been really interested in history, and particularly people's history, like recovering, you know, the history of just the common folk. And I felt like this deep kind of like mourning also, like since I was little, I've had like a lot of like white guilt and kind of a understanding that like white people have done some really horrible shit. And for me, that feels really close to like, feels very recent in my family. My grandparents were missionaries in Taiwan. My dad was born in Taiwan. And that is something that I've had like a lot of shame around and also anger around and have wanted to sort of just like not talk about. Like, I, you know, for me, missionaries, Christian missionaries really represent like imperialism and stripping people of their culture and all the things that I really hate and stand against. And so I've also felt like this need to like, not even like atone for that, but just to be like, you know, like, where does that come from? And like, what came before that? And how do I not just like totally abandon my family because of all the things that they've done that are bad? Like, you know, what came before that? And because of my European ancestry, what came before that is like, you know, pagan European practices and ways of life. And so kind of like jumping into that culture and, you know, that history has been a really healing experience and also has kind of like reading about like the witch hunts and the persecution of witches and pagan people and the peasantry has also sort of given me some answers as to like where the pain that caused my family to, you know, become colonizers and people who have, you know, done some really shameful things to other people, like where that pain that caused them to do that has come from, understanding that like they came from like a traumatized background and that has informed their actions. And it's given me a little bit of a sense of purpose to like heal that wound and to, in my own life, kind of figure out how do we move forward from that and not continue causing that kind of pain. So yeah, again, I feel like I went on a tangent there, but a lot of the witches that I know who have like a similar ancestry also feel that kind of sense of purpose and of like, you know, we're going back to see what was there before so that we can like, you know, stop stealing other people's cultures and also create a future that, you know, doesn't perpetuate this kind of pain forward.
No, thank you for that. Was not, I don't know what you said, long-winded or
yeah.
a tangent. No,
yeah.
I think what you said, what I grasped onto was kind of a way to work, stay within your family, but
right.
go past the problematic lineage. And so like right now, what people would call like the nuclear family, there's right. a lot of, and maybe like one or two generations after have had some very problematic lineage happening, but you right. can go beyond that and go back to your ancestors and
totally.
That. And I love that as like a healing practice.
Right. And it's not about like, you know, ignoring the pain and the harm that has been caused by my more recent ancestors, but it's also right. like tracing it back and being like, okay, so the ancestors that came before, you know, my grandparents and before their parents and their parents were like colonizers, you know, and then before them, you know, they were peasants and before them they were this, and there's like this kind of like trauma that's been passed down through the generations that I think has manifested as, you know, all these different forms of oppression that we see now. And my family, you know, has been at both ends of that oppression. They've been the oppressors and they've been the oppressed, and it's important to like dig into that complexity for me. And that's a big part of both my politics and my spiritual practice.
I feel like a really muddy question that I try to talk to like any queer person who is a witch. I just like feel like I want to like have this conversation with. And
yeah.
I don't really totally know how to formulate it in a super coherent way, but I think a lot about just the rejection of like biological essentialism, really, that we talk about mm-hmm. in whether it's queer theory, sort of in the academy, and we could also think about this in terms of critical race theory and like pushing back mm-hmm. against one drop blood rules,
right,
whether it's
absolutely.
for Black folks or Native folks or whatever the case may be, when, you know, there's just this like gross sort of surveillance of body, like actual blood and bodies, you know,
and
really rejecting that. And but then also thinking about on the ground, and this is certainly you know, I think changing for the better, that we don't have as many stories of like queer people being completely rejected from their family, but there's, you know, generations of queer folks who completely rejected their, you know, any notion of family being connected to blood and completely mm-hmm. reclaimed it in relationship to their queer family. And this also mm-hmm. feels relevant to me as somebody who grew up really working class, with like my family like extended beyond blood, because it was like people would live on our couch for 3 months because they, you know, couldn't, they got kicked out of their house or they were like
right.
fleeing a violent situation. And so family was just like a much more expansive system. And so mm-hmm. I find the value in like healing blood lineage, like as a witch, but I think prior to starting to practice this kind of stuff, I actually really, I think, would have rejected that, you know, on the basis of all this other stuff that I'm saying. So I guess my question is like, have you grappled with those kinds of thoughts about being invested in biological family?
Totally. And I think that it's kind of like a both and would be my answer, is like I think that it's really, really important for so many reasons to like expand that idea of what family is, and also to know that like the nuclear family is like a product of capitalism, and like, you know, kinship relationships have looked so many different ways in so many different times and different cultures. And yeah, blood is only so important. And I also do a lot of like kind of ancestor work with like ancestors of the path, not just ancestors of, you know, my blood, but ancestors who might not be blood related, but that, you know, have really made it possible for me to be here today. Awesome. And that's like, you know, like queer ancestors, yep. radical ancestors, like, you know, I'm really, that's partly why I'm interested in like people's history is like, I really look to like the diggers for inspiration. And I have a drawing that I did of Gerard Winstanley, I think is his name. He was one of the diggers. Do you guys know who the diggers are?
Yes. I can go into that a little bit. But I would love you to.
I do not.
Expand.
Yeah.
I don't.
So the diggers were a group of agrarian peasants who lived in England in the 1640s, and this was a time, you know, kind of the dawn of capitalism when the common lands were starting to become enclosed and private, and landlords were taking over, you know, huge swaths of land that had previously been open to everyone. And also happening at this time was like the Protestant Reformation and the switch from Catholicism to Protestantism also kind of like changed the way people thought about charity. Like, you know, the Catholic Church has a lot of things we could say about it that are not so great, but there was some sense that like, giving charity was a good thing and that it was one of the things that could get you into heaven. But with the switch to Protestantism, Protestants really kind of like looked down deserved, and people basically had to like pull themselves up from their own bootstraps. So at the same time that like the commons were being enclosed and people were having basically their whole livelihoods taken away from them, charity was also demonized. So there was like nowhere for people to go for basic needs. And this group of people who were at the time known as the Levelers, but now are called the Diggers, they literally just started going into what had previously been the commons and digging up the land and planting crops and, you know, feeding their families from that. And they really believed in the abolishment of private property, which was already kind of just like a new idea at the time, but was really taking hold. And they had some level of gender equality. They believed in, you know, brothers and sisters working together for communal good. And they're just, you know, talking about them, every time I talk about them, I get the chills. And, you know, ultimately they were oppressed and the land was taken back by the landlords. But their vision for this sort of like communal life, you know, beyond private property, beyond the state, and really trying to reclaim the commons is something that I'm so inspired by and thinking about all the time. So they are an example of, you know, ancestors of the path. And there are many other examples of people like them throughout the world that really inspire me and inform my practices.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's exactly sort of like the kind of just, even just like having this conversation, because I do the same. I mean, in whether it's queer spaces or like radical political spaces, like we so often talk about ancestors and elders outside of blood. And so I really appreciate the way that you're finding to sort of like honor that and also acknowledge, you know, the need to confront our blood lineage too. So thank you for thinking through that with me. I appreciate that.
It's one of my favorite things to talk about.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then, Melody, I forget what your second half of that question was.
Oh, what it takes to identify as a witch.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot because I'm not into, like, you know, hard and fast definitions for things. I think that, like, people come to spirituality and come to witchcraft in all different, you know, ways, taking different paths. But I have been thinking a lot about, you know, so being a witch, like, you know, you don't have to do tarot, you don't have to like, you know, even necessarily like have an altar or celebrate, you know, the pagan holidays, but I think that, you know, there's something about being a witch that, like, you know, connects, it's like a connection to the natural world and just your surroundings. Like, you know, the natural world could also be a city, but just like a connection to where you are, kind of situating yourself in the world. It's very much like a materialist kind of spirituality, and also a connection to the people around you and sort of like web of relationships, both, you know, current and then also again kind of going back into that, the past, whether it's your direct ancestors or you know, ancestors of the path, and then also kind of like a relationship with your body and also just like your kind of like higher self or your guides, your intuition, developing practices that really support strengthening your intuition and trusting it. Those all feel important, but again, that can look so many different ways for different people, and I'm not into like coming up with a definition of what that has to look like. But something that I have been thinking about and that feels important to me, I just wrote a little bit about this. I think that to be a witch really means to also be connected to, you know, class struggle and the struggle of, you know, liberation for all people. So class struggle, the struggle against white supremacy, the struggle against the cis hetero patriarchy, all these things, because, you know, historically to be a witch was to be in opposition to all of these things. There's a reason why the church and the state burned witches at the stake, and it's because they posed a really significant threat to the creation and maintenance of capitalism. And something that I've been really like kind of thinking about and kind of, I don't know, struggling with is seeing the commodification of witchcraft and just sort of the popularity that witchcraft has taken on in the last couple of years, kind of outside of the context of like what it has historically meant to be a witch. And that sort of gets into talking about working witches.
Hi, Killjoys. It's Rachel here popping in with a reminder on some places you can find us on the interweb and how you can support us. So you can always subscribe to us on your favorite podcast application. And of course, you get extra FKJ points if you leave us a review on iTunes. It is a wonderful way to spread the word and gain new followers, and we really appreciate it. On the social media tip, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can like our Facebook page, and you can also join our closed community page, Feminist Killjoys Community-WTF Power. We have a Spotify mixtape that you can search out, Feminist Killjoys PhD Mixtape. And if you want to support us financially and you have some extra dollars, you could donate to our Patreon, or as a one-time thing on our website, just click on the birdie to make a one-time PayPal donation. Patreon donors also get access to the Killjoy Review newsletter. And of course, you can always email us at fkj.phd@gmail.com. And finally, you can leave us a voicemail at 414-858-7818. Again, 414-858-7818. Back to the show.
Funny you should bring that up.
Yeah.
For my own transition, because my next question was going to be, tell us about your witches union. And also, I'll remember to re-ask you that this, but I just want to say before I forget, all of your amazing art that you do for the witches union too. I want to nerd out with you on that later, but first, most important, tell us about the union.
So this is something that I've been thinking about for really like the last year, as I've kind of really stepped into calling myself a witch and also really stepped into calling myself a socialist, and kind of grappling also with like, you know, do those things go together? Like, do I need to like kind of like hide either of those identities depending on like what circle I'm in, like if I'm with witches or if I'm with socialists, like how do these things go together? And the conclusion that I've come to is that they're like inextricably linked. And something that I, you know, have been thinking about is both in the sort of like leftist organizing culture and in the like witchcraft community, I feel like there's like a lack of the other. Like in the socialist world and like leftist world, I think that there's like a lack of talking about spirituality and spiritual wellness and magic and like taking magic seriously. And I think that sometimes in leftist circles, people can fall for like the, I don't know, like atheist, like rationalist, which I kind of masculine mindset of like having to be like really serious and like literal about things. And there's sort of this like fear of not being taken seriously already, because, you know, to be like an anti-capitalist is to kind of be shaking things up. And so I feel like people, there's like a little bit of like a respectability politics that I think that happens in leftist circles of like, you know, needing to be taken seriously, and so not wanting to talk about like the surreal or the magical or things that might be labeled as like woo being seen as almost like bougie idea or like a bougie, I don't know, culture. And then in the witch community, I've really been seeing, and Tess sort of talked about this in their interview, is like this rise of like the girl boss and like the boss witch and this like, you know, entrepreneurial spirit of millennial witches, and without any real like conversation about where we fit inside of, you know, the labor movement, or if we're, you know, even just like any acknowledgement of there being a labor movement. And even like, you know, people in that witch community will even talk about like, you know, racism and white supremacy, and even the word capitalism comes up a lot, but it seems like it's not really grounded in like an understanding of how these things all go together. And I think that that's partly because, like, you know, millennial witches for sure, and really anybody who's been alive for the last 50 years, like, hasn't been around for a robust labor movement. Like, we don't know what that looks like. And I think for a lot of younger people, unions are something that, like, you know, people in factories are a part of. But it's, like, hard to imagine what an organized labor movement would look in the age of like the gig economy and like people having Patreons and being self-employed. So, you know, yeah, something that, you know, I've been wanting to kind of grapple with and work towards is like, how do we bring more magic into leftist organizing spaces? How do we bring more leftist organizing into witch spaces? And kind of that's what led to the creation of Working Witches. And Working Witches is right now, you know, it's a work in progress, and we are sort of calling it a union, but also right now playing with the idea of maybe being more like of a mutual aid network or a collective. But basically it's me and two other people, Molly Meehan, who's known as the Firebrand Witch, and then Tess Giberson, who I'll talk to. City Witch is their business name. And they're two people who I've just like became friends with on Instagram, and we've just like messaged back and forth and really like kind of, I don't know, somehow realized that we were all on the same wavelength with all of this, and started having conversations. And I guess it was like, it was actually like on the Virgo new moon, I had this idea. I was like, what if we made like a union for witches? And I sent them a message and I was like, what do you guys think about this? And they're like, we're in, like, let's talk about it. And then it kind of just exploded from there. And I made a post on Instagram. I did a drawing that said Working Class Witches Unite. And it was really this call for, you know, understanding ourselves as workers, but also understanding ourselves as like part of this larger struggle that goes beyond just like the witchcraft industry, but connects us to other workers. And in sort of the spirit of the IWW, the Wobblies, the like one big union, to recognize that like we are all a part of this struggle. We all need to like really, you know, show solidarity with each other so that like we can kind of work towards a world where none of us are, you know, living under capitalism, basically, where like if all the workers could unite, we could, you know, really change the system. Yeah.
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 That's like my heart beat is like literally sped up because I'm just like so excited about everything that you just said. My dissertation research was on the relationship between queerness and the U.S. labor movement, and largely in an effort to think about how, you know, thinking about queer struggles in relationship to union struggles, and also like reminding young radical queers that the labor movement is actually this, that we need to root our critiques like ultimately in capitalism, even though we have to think about these differences that marginalize us, you know, from sexuality and gender, but that ultimately we need to like connect these struggles very explicitly. So just like a lot of the same things that you're talking about in relationship to connecting sort of spirituality and labor, and leftism, I suppose, more broadly.
Right.
And I also remember having, we can get into Melody, and I've had lots of conversations about yoga and cultural appropriation. But another thing that, you know, dabbling in sort of spirituality, yoga technically means union. So that's like a thing that you hear in the yoga world a lot.
Oh, wow.
Yoga means union. And so
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I've always thought about the inherent relationship between this idea of sort of interdependence and interconnectedness that we talk about in sort of spiritual realms and the union, right? Which has been saying an injury to one is an injury to all, is like
exactly
the exact same notion as, you know, as what we talk about in, you know, in quote unquote woo spaces, you know?
Right.
So I just love that y'all are drawing explicit, attention to it. It's also very funny. It's no wonder that, like, when Melody was like, let's do another Witch Month, I was like, I know exactly who I want to talk to, and it's you and Tess and Molly. So Molly's going to be our next.
I know. Molly told me, I'm like, that's so funny.
It's super funny, but, like, not surprising because, you know, obviously that's who I'm super drawn to. So that's amazing. Yeah, that's just so, yeah, this is, I don't necessarily, well, I do have some follow-up questions, but that's just sort of my comment. I guess, so I'm curious, thinking about organizing precarious labor, and I hear that you're saying, you know, it might ultimately end up being sort of like a mutual aid collective, which is rad, but I'm wondering your thoughts about, you know, have you done much investigating into ways that sort of freelance unions have worked and operated, or, you know, when you originally were thinking of it as a union, like, what could that look like? Where has that worked elsewhere? You know, I know there's attempts in freelance writing land. So if you could just speak to that, I don't know if you...
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, I have no labor organizing experience. Like, I have mostly been self-employed or worked under the table my whole adult life. And so, you know, I'm very, very new to this whole world. And I can say honestly that, like, one of the big inspirations for me, and this might make people take me a lot less seriously, but was the movie Newsies.
Yes.
which I
thought, oh my gosh. Rachel loves that movie.
It's like the best movie of all time, really. I have no idea how it got made, especially by Disney, because it's so radical, and its politics, like, really hold up. But, you know, there's a line in one of the songs that's like, even though we don't have hats or badges, we're a union just by saying so. And it gives me chills every time I say it. And again, I feel like silly for saying that, but I think that one of the big sort of myths I think that young people in particular have around labor organizing is that, like, you have to be an expert in it. I think that, like, that's just something that we've learned about, like, pretty much everything is, like, you can't do it unless you really know what you're doing. You can't mess up. You can't make mistakes. You can't, like, just jump into it. You, like, need to have an expert show you how. And there's definitely, like, people who we can learn from and should learn from, and, you know, people who have been doing this work forever that we look to for support and for help. But I think it's also really important and empowering for people to just be like, wait, yeah, like, we can just start a union. We can, like, start organizing ourselves and just jump into it and see what that looks like. And the IWW has been a big inspiration for me. One of the things that, like, kind of really got me, this whole thing kind of, like, clicked into place, because I was home visiting family in Chicago, and I found a book at a just, like, used bookstore that was called Dancing in the Streets. And it's a kind of anthology of The Rebel Worker, which was a really incredible magazine that was put out by the IWW in Chicago in, like, the 1960s. And it's this, like, kind of collection of anarchist writing, surrealist writing, situationist writing that's just, like, it's so inspiring and funny and, like, just, I don't know, this, like, really incredible mix of pop culture and critical analysis and political analysis and history and all these things. But one of the things that inspired me when reading about that was that they had a branch, an industrial union branch of the IWW for poets. And, you know, I don't know if that particular branch is still around or how long it thrived, but that was like, well, if you can have a union for poets, like, you can totally have one for witches. And that's, you know, where this kind of whole idea really, like, sparked from. And for me, you know, what that would look like, we've talked about it, and we're meeting every Friday to continue talking about it, but we've thought about, you know, creating, like, a emergency fund for members if somebody gets sick and can't work. We've talked about creating resources, free resources for people who want to figure out how to set up, like, a equitable sliding scale that doesn't, you know, keep you, like, in poverty, but also makes your work accessible. We've talked about creating resources for people just, like, you know, having an introduction to, like, financial planning and all these things, but still rooted in anti-capitalism. Like, you know, how do you, like, make money and, you know, run a business if that's what you want to do, if that's what you need to do to survive, but also, you know, do it with this, goal of like ultimately abolishing the whole system. And for me, like that's also one of the reasons why being part of the IWW is something that I'm interested in. And then that's still a possibility in the future, is like once we have kind of built ourselves up enough and have enough of our own kind of structures in place, we could still potentially approach the IWW about becoming an official industrial union branch. And part of the thing that's standing in the way of that right now too is that we're an international group right now, and to have a industrial union branch you have to be located in the same region, but again in the future that's something that we could still do. But the reason why I love the IWW in particular as opposed to just like other kind of traditional trade unions is they're explicitly anti-capitalist. You know, they don't, their ultimate goal isn't to just like, you know, have people go out on strikes, sign contracts for better wages, and then like, you know, be done. They want to both improve the current lives of workers now while also always having an eye to breaking down the whole system of wage slavery, you know, once and for all. And to me, that's also like should be the goal of witches. So having, you know, a witch union in the spirit of the IWW, or even, you know, maybe potentially as an actual part of the IWW, feels like really the right place for us to be.
Absolutely. That's really exciting. And yeah. I think we're all just excited to see where, how it takes shape and what comes from it. We can talk about this like off the interview, but one of our, Melody and my friends from Minneapolis, is a super big wobbly, and he did a bunch of organizing in the fast food industry and has like, he's a cis straight dude, but he's a good dude. And so it could be a connection. I mean, he's done a lot That'd of like great. Very like bottom up, like nothing was happening and he just sort of started it from scratch.
So
I can definitely make that connection. Mel, did you want to nerd out about art a little bit?
With the print work that you do for the lettering, how did you, what's your resource for learning different lettering styles?
Literally, I just draw them. I just go for it. I have no real like formal training. I did my freshman year of college at the Art Institute in Chicago, but like was a total mess that year and like didn't really make anything I was proud of. And then I transferred to a liberal arts college and like didn't take another art class until my senior year. And so it wasn't until I got out of school and was actually like, you know, sick at home with Lyme disease and just bored out of my mind that I started drawing again. So yeah, the lettering stuff is something that's like really just come very recently. But yeah, basically I like literally Google like Gothic font and then I just like do my own version of it. And it's like wonky and messy and, you know, I like it that way. But also takes a lot of time and, you know, I still have Lyme disease and my hands cramp up a lot. So I am thinking also like, I don't know how sustainable it is for me to like have this BR aesthetic that I hand draw and hand write everything. But, you know, I'm doing it now and I, you know, I like the way it looks and it seems like I've been getting a lot of good feedback. So that means a lot.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Definitely like thinking about labor though, like that's a lot of, labor. Hopefully this is even more enticing reason for people to check it out. I'm sure they're already inspired to do that. So can you just tell folks what, where to find you and also Working Witches and anything else you want people to follow on the social media area?
Yeah. So, you can find me on Instagram at @cwaitwaitwait. And I also have a website, it's kcwait.com. And I'm also currently working on a like 100% non-binary, non-hierarchical tarot deck called the Flower People Tarot. And you can follow along with that on my Instagram. I post about it a lot. And I also have information about that on my website. I'm almost done with the deck, so it'll be coming out hopefully in the next year or two. And then we also have an Instagram for Working Witches, which is @WorkingWitches. And we're working towards having a website and, you know, more places that you can find us. But for now, that's the place to kind of look and see what's going on. I'm trying to think anything else. I think that's it. But there's a lot of exciting things happening, and we're working towards creating a system to have more people to be, you know, directly involved in the organizing of Working Witches. Right now it's just the three of us just because we're, you know, trying to figure out the right systems to hopefully be able to like grow in a sustainable way. But we're really, really excited about, you know, collaborating with other people. And we definitely encourage people to reach out, especially if they have labor organizing background or, you know, experience and want to help out.
Awesome. Well, I know that that'll be enticing to a lot of our listeners, like I said. So yeah. Hopefully you'll get, a lot more people following you and a lot more interest and involvement. So thanks you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. And we're just really grateful for the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Likewise. This is so great.
Yay. Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.